and welcome to another episode of the Saxo Market Call podcast. As always, my name is Renato, and I am your host. Today, it is Tuesday, and it is Equities Talk, and therefore, I am joined once again by my good colleague, Peter Garnery. Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Hi, son. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, fine, thanks. A lot to talk about today. As always, we have obviously we have one big thing to touch upon, but we won't do that until later. That is the NVIDIA earnings coming up, which is, I guess, more or less what everybody is waiting for this week. But we also have some other interesting news, and I think that we'll touch upon. But I think let's just start overall. How's it going on the financial or the equity market specifically?
Yeah, I think the mood is pretty okay. We have had a couple of weeks now with falling bond yields in the US, a little bit more stable in Europe, and on the equities market performance, it's been pretty okay. As we talked about last week, we have had this repricing of Fed rate cuts. We went from like undecided on 1.5 cut to two cuts and a little bit more priced in the market because of that inflation report. So that has been good for US equities. If we look a little bit towards Asia, China and emerging markets have been talk of the town for quite some time. We've had a pretty rough start to the week, today. We were down more than 2% in Hong Kong trading. And one of the culprit was Li Auto, which is one of the large EV makers in China, coming up with an outlook for Q2 that was significantly below the estimates, and the shares were down 18%. So that was
a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot. And I think it once again, you know, paints this picture of China that, you know, this zigzag or, you know, false starts constantly, right? We are, you know, the government is doing some proactively on the fiscal side or in subsidy sides or on policy side of things. Market gets exciting. Chinese equities have been up quite a bit over the past couple of months. But then you constantly have these data points coming in different areas of the economy and now also the EV. And I think to a large extent, it makes sense, right? So the Chinese EV makers are not exporting a lot of EVs to the US, and now the Biden administration have put on very steep tariffs on these imports. So they're selling a lot to Europe. But as we also have talked about, there's a lot of Chinese EVs that are just stacking up at European ports, right? Painting this picture that there is just an immense pressure on Chinese industry to just produce and keep employment going, and it's just exported. And Europe is still open for business, for Chinese businesses. But I mean, with all these EVs sitting in ports in Europe, of course, there's a huge overhang. And so what does it mean for China? I still think there's a lot of outstanding questions. There's no doubt, at least, that, you know, the Chinese government is in a position where they need to do a lot of things on the policy side. Whether it will materialize in a positive outlook for Chinese equities, I think that is a little bit more questionable still.
Yeah, and I mean, we have talked a lot about China this year, and it was so interesting coming out of the Chinese New Year a few months back, and all of a sudden it just seemed like Chinese equities all of a sudden performed really well. But as you've said for a long time, that there are these fundamental questions about China and the way or the overhang they have on their economy and how they get it restarted, also with the housing crisis and all of that. So a lot is going on there, definitely. If we just go back to the US where you started your talk, we've also had a few news that we probably should touch upon. We saw Microsoft, they just announced these computers with AI chips from Qualcomm. Now we have NVIDIA, the earnings that we'll talk about a little bit later, coming out tomorrow after US market close. But have we seen anything react in the AI space? Because, I mean, this seems like a pretty big deal for personal usage, but I'm not really sure. Is this even something that's important? It just seemed like a pretty interesting news to me.
It is important. And I've been talking about this as the key risk for NVIDIA for quite some time. And I have looked like a fool because obviously it's not something that pans out in the short term, right? It takes time. And I'm drawing up a bigger piece on NVIDIA because we're introducing this new concept. You know, every Wednesday we want to put a spotlight on a high quality company. And we thought it was pretty fitting to do one on NVIDIA now that they're reporting. And next week, if time allows it, we will look a little bit at AstraZeneca that we're also going to talk about in today's podcast. But coming back to the Microsoft story and NVIDIA, so the biggest threat is, and I like this quote from Jeff Bezos, which we're also putting into the into the research piece is that your margin is my opportunity. And you can interpret that in different ways, but one of the interpretations is that if you're running a high margin business and you're a key supplier to an industry and it's a big part of the overall cost in the value chain, there's a huge incentive for the people in that value chain to try to get rid of you by finding a cheaper alternative. And I think that is really what is going on now. We know that OpenAI is intensively working on AI chips. Now you mentioned Microsoft. This news that has also been highlighted. We know Meta and Google are also working on their own AI chips, because at the end of the day, if you have great chip designers, you can come up with chips just like Apple did with their M1 chip, and you can go to TSMC with the IP and the schemas to do this, and then you can get them to produce it. Mm. So it looks like that, of course, competition is coming for NVIDIA. The secret sauce, the big moat and thing that NVIDIA saw before anyone else was that they invested heavily in software. A lot of the business is around the software, the CUDA platform, just to mention one. They have other things as well, but that's really the biggest glue in their business. And there's FT is running an article as well this morning that there's a huge cross-collaboration in the industry between Google, Meta, Amazon and Microsoft, etc., to come up with this new software to compete with CUDA, which can be used on other AI chips. And the product is called Triton. So there's just, and that's because NVIDIA is enormously profitable, right?
Mm,
and these GPUs are extremely expensive. So if you can sort of have a cross collaboration on the software and maybe also on the hardware side to minimize the cost of NVIDIA, then it's a shot worth taking, and that I think is what's going to happen. So I think we can discuss a little bit more when we go into the NVIDIA, but it's definitely an interesting news there from Microsoft for sure.
You know what, Peter? Let's just stay at NVIDIA now. Now we're going down the line of this AI.
Down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, exactly. And it is something that it's always fun to talk about. And I just wanted to connect. I guess the next, whenever they've taken on NVIDIA, they got to take on ASML to break their monopoly in these lithography machines. That's always a tough word to say. But let's stay with NVIDIA. As I said, they're reporting Wednesday after market close in the US. Even though they've been so incredibly successful for the past few years, I guess we're still expecting it to be a pretty good earnings, right?
I think there is quite a good likelihood that we will get a very strong earnings release from NVIDIA, and the, as we talked about last week, the messages that we're getting from TSMC in terms of their CapEx and what they see in the marketplace on the industry. It would be quite unusual if NVIDIA goes out and talk or puts out an outlook that disappoints the market. If they disappoint, it's just because the consensus estimates in the market is way higher than what we see from the analyst side of things. The analysts are expecting revenue to be up around just slightly below 12% quarter on quarter and 240%+ increase compared to a year ago, right? And bottom line up 550%. So that's pretty dramatic figures. And I don't think there is anything that is suggesting, both from the crypto mining perspective, but also from the GPUs and all the CapEx that we see with data centers. And also now, as we talked about last week, Apple going to introduce and make a deal with OpenAI and put generative AI capability on the iPhone. That will require potentially a lot of investments from Apple to maybe run data centers as well. So I don't think it's right here and now that NVIDIA will come up with this huge shock. We're getting closer, because then we're back to the old horse that we have been talking so much about, Zan, with the expectations investing, right? There is a point where if you cannot continue to exceed expectations, then eventually you will have a hiccup on the stock price. And I find the whole competitive landscape and the technology and everything that is being, the whole Silicon Valley effort among these big technology companies to come up with alternatives to NVIDIA, I think is quite interesting. And there will be a day where there will be more competition for NVIDIA. But maybe NVIDIA is just the next Microsoft or the next ASML, where they develop a natural monopoly and they create such a reinforcing ecosystem that you cannot break it down. Maybe that is the case with NVIDIA. Time will tell, but there's definitely will be an attempt to break down those walls. And that's also why in my research note on NVIDIA, I call it, can NVIDIA fend off the barbarians at the gate?
That's a nice title. I like that.
It's actually a reference to a book.
Okay.
About the hostile M&A takeover of Nabisco. Back in the days when we had the M&A raiders going gung-ho in the US. It's actually a great book.
We have to recommend that at some point. I've also read a book once, and that book was about the financial world. And one of the things that was said in that book is that when everybody agrees that something is going the right way, then probably that's the time to get out. In such a case for NVIDIA, I mean, isn't there? I'm not saying that it's gonna disappoint, but aren't we close to a point where there's much greater downside than there is upside in something like that? I mean, if they came out with a disappointing earnings release, I guess that could put shockwaves through the entire IT and technology landscape.
Yeah, that's true. I would still say, based on the information landscape or picture we have right now, that I would be quite surprised if we get a big shock in the NVIDIA earnings tomorrow night after the close. But I think the window is closing in, and we will get closer. You can also see it. I mean, we had a discussion with a colleague the other day. I mean, if you look at the quarter-on-quarter sales growth rates, I mean, they're coming down fast now, right? If you look at analysts, they're projecting a couple of years into the future that the quarter-on-quarter growth rates will really have come down to just normal growth levels. So growth is, but the price is already reflecting that, which is actually the weird case that in the event that this generative AI is just the biggest super growth rate we have ever seen, then based on the consensus analyst expectations for revenue growth, like T plus 2 years ahead and then beyond, maybe that's too conservative. So we're all back to the expectation, but I think it's the competition that is the key angle, right? Because taking your wonderful quote, it was the same with Tesla, right? Mm. Everything was going right. They were going for 40% global market share. They're going to kill the entire car industry. Nothing could go wrong. Elon Musk was the most coolest CEO ever in history, right? And then fast forward 2 years, I mean, everything has been upside down, and turns out that EVs are so easy to make that the Chinese are just, you know, swarming the market with supply, and prices are coming down. Profitability is very difficult. And as Elon Musk said himself, I mean, they really need to innovate. If there is no self-driving car, how the hell can you defend high margins in this industry? It only seems like it's Porsche and Ferrari that have found a formula to have high, attractive margins in an industry, right? So, and we had in Denmark, we had Ørsted, right? Everyone agreed in 2021, offshore wind power with the energy crisis, with and everything that was coming, this was going to be great and extremely profitable in the future. And now fast forward, you know, have problems left, right, and center with offshore, and natural gas are suddenly cheap. So sometimes we get surprised about our assumption for why something or that everyone agrees on is a good thing.
I actually think that the right quote was that when your barber starts to give you equity or stock buying advice, then it's time to get out.
When who?
Your barber.
Ah, your barber. Yeah. That's a good one.
All right, Peter, let's leave NVIDIA. I'm sure if anything like that is going to happen, which it sounds like you aren't really expecting, then we'll probably be in here and try to make sense of it all in the studio.
Yes.
And otherwise, we will definitely touch upon it in next week's equity podcast. But we still have a few other things that we should talk about. One is Palo Alto, the cybersecurity company, which also disappointed because their forecast was lowered at their earnings release. And it sounds like it is a general thing. I know that cybersecurity is actually something that you've been pretty high on, at least not too long ago.
I still like it.
Yeah, you still like it. But what do you take from the Palo Alto earnings then?
I think what we are in right now, coming back to the expectations investing framework, I think we are right now moving towards a valley. A low point in the industry. So we came off a couple of very, very, very high growth years. The war in Ukraine definitely helped as well. But it's also becoming quite clear that the investors were extrapolating the growth trajectory, and the valuations got extremely high. So expectations were really high. And what happened, it seems like, that a lot of the industry is just experiencing a fatigue right now on CapEx from the corporate sector and governments. There's a lot of focus on generative AI. It seems like that's being prioritized, at least on that part of the cybersecurity industry that is still involved on the hardware side, where you buy actually physical protection or physical products. The cloud, which Palo Alto is also a part of, is probably not seeing the same slowdown in growth rate, but also there is just a general mix shift a little bit away, I would say, from cybersecurity towards generative AI. So that's why I'm saying I think we are moving towards a value point. And then beyond that, the growth rates are still going to be incredibly attractive in the cybersecurity industry. This is, you know, this is a very, very long-term trend. Sometimes I make the analogy that it's probably like cybersecurity is probably like where the PC and you know, the Windows, Microsoft, the industry were back in the early 1990s, right? We already had a decade of very high, of 10, 15 years of very high growth rate, just like Microsoft had through the 80s. But then we're standing at the 1990s and so many interesting things are happening. There are so many catalysts and drivers, and it's just going to become bigger and bigger and bigger. And interestingly enough, a lot of the generative AI will just create a lot of new demand for cybersecurity because, wow, that can be used in a lot of bad ways.
Yeah, we have already experienced that. So I'm sure that it at least makes sense, right, that with added functionality on the internet or whatever you want to call it, cybersecurity is growing increasingly important. So point taken, Peter. Let's move on. Another news piece that came out not too long ago was that JP Morgan's CEO, Jamie Dimon, is closing in on retirement. It wasn't really that exact what he said, what was said, but it just seemed like, I mean, it is a pretty big deal. As far as I'm aware, JP Morgan is the biggest US bank, so, and he's also a pretty big figure in the financial industry. Is this something that's important? Is this something that from a equity analyst like yourself is something you take note of?
No, I don't pay too much weight or put too much attention to this. Obviously, he's a giant in the industry. Has been really transformational in the way of the whole M&A wave that took place in U.S. banks a couple of decades back, when he was climbing the corporate ladder, and he's been he's been a phenomenal CEO for J.P. Morgan. He's still the CEO, but he's been phenomenal, and J.P. Morgan is probably one of the strongest banks in the entire world, and I think that the infrastructure, the organization that J.P. Morgan has built over the years under his leadership, will not go away just because they changed the CEO. And I think J.P. Morgan Chase is definitely a candidate for our spotlight on high quality companies. It's definitely something I should write down and do a piece on, because it is quite an extraordinary bank. And there are, you know, despite all the endless headwinds for financial services companies and banks, I mean, JP Morgan is one of those that really, and which is surprising given their size, have been, you know, avoiding a lot of these headwinds and being able to deliver extraordinary return on equity, on tangible equity, and delivering strong shareholder returns over the years.
I think a final note that a final company that we're going to talk about is something you also teased in the beginning. AstraZeneca,
yeah,
went out with their earnings, and medical company AstraZeneca that they wanted to double their revenue by 2030.
It's pretty aggressive.
That is quite aggressive, and I know that for a fact. It's a company that you've been following for quite some time, and you also have a quite funny story about it.
Yeah,
but let's just take the earnings at first. What was your takeaway from these earnings?
Well, I think it just reinforces this picture that AstraZeneca has a very interesting product pipeline. It's not the earnings itself that, you know, the stock price really just popped a lot on that. So that's not really, but it's, I think it's a pretty aggressive revenue target they have set out for 2030. I mean, a doubling of revenue. And AstraZeneca is one of the more interesting cancer drug pipelines out there. And another one of the potential blockbusters that are coming is that they have a new drug in late stage trial against asthma attacks, which seems very promising. And if they get the approval and it gets through the final late stage test there, that's, according to themselves, could become a $4 billion product alone. Which would be new additional revenue, factoring in no cannibalization of existing products in their portfolio. I mean, that's just an interesting thing. And the funny story about AstraZeneca is that I mentioned this stock to my dad back in 2010 or 11. And at this point in time, it was one of the deepest value stocks you could find in all of Europe. Low PE, low price to book. I was a huge value investor back at the days. I'm not so fanatical about that any longer. I think this whole growth versus value is actually a little bit of a silly concept, but that's probably for another day. At least that's my conclusion over the years. And I said, look at this, it's very cheap. And it has become a success for all the other reasons than it was because it was a value stock. What happened was, coming back to, expectations investing, the expectations about AstraZeneca just have changed for the better nonstop for 14 years. Because back then, they were moving towards this patent cliff. Oh, they had the worst drug portfolio. They had some big potential blockbusters that got canceled during trial stage, etc. All these things. Everything was bad. And they just trimlined the business. They grew their product, their patent portfolio and their drug discovery portfolio. And here we are. They have one of the most interesting drug portfolios out there. And I should say, of course, for compliance purposes, that my dad is still a shareholder. But it is an interesting company. And the funny story as well about AstraZeneca is that I listened to another podcast the other day, and they talked about, if you look at all the top stocks in the UK equity index, most of them are companies that were incorporated before World War II, like really old companies. And AstraZeneca is actually one of the few stocks, major mega caps in the UK equity market, that is actually a more modern company, if you can say that.
A youngling.
Yeah.
No, but that is interesting, and obviously it's going to be interesting to follow AstraZeneca as they move towards this pretty hefty target. And you mentioned you'd probably write something about it in the near future as well.
Yeah, I actually think AstraZeneca is because we cannot only write about U.S. companies. So I think that a doubling of revenue over the next 6 years is not something you see every day, and it's one of the largest stocks in Europe. So I think AstraZeneca actually deserves a little bit of attention, because we always talk about Novo Nordisk. We have written endlessly about that. So why not just talk about something else? And it is a high quality company, AstraZeneca.
Definitely. But before you write about that, Peter, you will write about NVIDIA. And when will that be out for everyone to
tomorrow read? when we have done all our morning routines, I'll finish it up, and I think you will learn a thing or two about NVIDIA if you're not up to speed on that one.
All right, and you can of course always find that on the Saxo platforms as well as on home.saxo, and go to Inspiration, where all of Peter's good writing is alongside his colleagues. But I think that was everything for today, Peter.
Cool.
As you can hear out there, even though NVIDIA is stealing the spotlight this week, there is still a lot of things going on, which is great. But Peter, thank you so much for coming and making us a little bit smarter as always today.
Thank you very much, John.
And to all of you out there, on behalf of Peter Garnery, the Saxo Market Call podcast, everybody here at Saxo, my name is Søren Otto. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back anytime soon, but until then, happy trading.